This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 708, brought to you by Daybreak, the only podcast left. Available now on Spotify. And Harry's. To redeem your Harry's trial set, go to harrys.com/iFanboy. And of course, iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 708. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
Hello. You'll find we're not on RTE. That's a bunch of shite. We are... Fanboy. I could do the whole thing like this. I won't. Every week we read our stack of comics and one of us picks their favorite book and we call that the Pick of the Week. And sometimes we spend a good hour or two with a guitar putting that little bit to music, trying to figure out how I can make that work. But more on that some other day. We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron. I went with country, Connor, by the way, you're clear. We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick. We are skipping listener mail this week. There are many, many things, many books to talk about.
Well, we may or may not skip listener mail.
We don't like to skip listener mail.
If we can do one, we'll do one.
But occasionally, and this is not commercial in any way, occasionally we get carried talking away about our sponsors, which is, I think it says a lot about how much we like talking and making up stuff.
Also, I mean, just before we get to the pick, and you finished your little spiel and I'll explain.
That's fine. There will be spoilers. We're going to talk about all these books. There are things in them that have happened, and if you haven't read them, that might hamper the experience for you, and we don't want that to happen. So that's your spoiler warning. Connor, you go now.
So last week was the fifth week. I had 10 comics, and I don't know what my pick would have been. I don't think I know what my pick would have been. I don't know if I mentioned it last week or not.
I barely knew what my pick was.
But this week, it was a regular old week. I had it was a heavy week. I had like 23 comics.
You said that, and I actually didn't have that feeling. Like, I didn't feel like I had a lot. I didn't have a little, but that was interesting. So I think you must have read some stuff I didn't.
When I finished reading, I had four comics that I thought were legitimately great, I legitimately loved, and I could legitimately made the pick of the week. I kind of had a little panic about it. And instead of choosing the pick on Wednesday when I finished my books, I left it to Thursday. I needed to sleep on it and think on it, and it was really hard. I don't know the last time I had this hard of a choice to picking a pick of the week. I wish I could have picked all four I wish I could have honored them all, but I decided to go with Black Cat number 6, Jed McKay, Mike Dowling, filling in for this issue. I really wanted to honor this book because it's been really terrific, and I love this issue. This is my kind of comic. This was a in-between issue. The last story was the heist at Four Freedoms Plaza, or whatever they're not there anymore, whatever they are now, the building downtown, the Fantastic Four, their headquarters. That was a two-parter, and this issue was Felicia Hardy, the Black Cat, takes a break, and goes on a date, and it turns out her date is Batroc the Leaper, who we all love here at iFanboy.
Il est le beeper.
And in addition to the date being adorable and they were really fun together, it was structured really well because while the date's happening, her mentor, the Black Fox, who trained her to be a thief and runs her little thief.
Le Renault Noir!
Runs her thieving guild, he gets attacked. So while they're having their date and over their adorable date dialogue, we keep cutting back to him running for his life, fighting off goons in car chases. And so there's a really great juxtaposition here between her finally getting to unwind and flirting and drinking champagne and him bleeding and having to take out guys and smoke like Batman. And it was a really terrifically paced and structured issue. And the Mike Dowling was a terrific fill-in artist. It's normally drawn by the old artist from Animal Man.
Travel Foreman?
Yes. It's normally drawn by Travel Foreman. He's great. And it brings a really strange energy to the book. But Dowling is really terrific. And I don't know the last time I saw him on something, but I feel like it should have been something we've both read.
Possibly.
He's really good. I was just really impressed with the craft. I was really happy to have this sort of the breather issue. It's always fun to have an issue where we get to focus on the characters as people and see them in non-hero situations. Also, the conversation was great. You know, it's a first date, so there's a lot of awkward first date conversations. He asks her about Spider-Man. She says, "You must have a hero you're obsessed with." And he says, "Of course I have one." And she says, "Who is it? I'm dying to know." And he says, "It's Steve Rogers." And first she's confused. And he says, "It's fighting is as intimate as making love and in the, you know, in the great French way." And then the date hits a lull, as sometimes happens. So they decide to go steal something and then have sex. It was a really great issue. This series has been great. I don't know who Jed McKay is. I've never heard of him before, but he's really good at writing comics.
Mike Dowling did Unfollow.
That was it. That was it. Oh. That was a great-looking book.
Yeah. Recently did Star Wars TIE Fighter, which is a weird little thing that was good.
Unfollow was one of
our... It was Unfollow, yep.
Year. Yeah.
Yep.
He's terrific. I don't know what he's doing.
And 2000 AD, he's one of those guys.
Well, this is a great issue. And also, if you're at all curious about this book, this is totally an issue anyone can pick up and read. You don't have to know anything about what's going on in the series. It's an X-Men playing softball issue, but with some really serious stuff happening in the side story. This has just been a really fun book. I don't know how long it's going to go. I can't imagine a Black Cat series is going to go that long, but it's one of those little hidden gems that you find, those little tiny side books that they put good people on that are good that people aren't reading, and they go away after a few issues. It was a really fun issue, and it tells you a lot about how much I enjoyed it, because there was a lot of great books this week that made me really happy. I would think that most people probably thought that Batman Universe would have been the pick, number 5.
I was one of those people.
I struggled, Josh.
I mean, largely because you told me, I don't know how I'm going to not make this the pick of the week about halfway through. And I was like, listen, we will field whatever comes.
This was the last book I read, Batman Universe number 5. I saved the most anticipated book for last. You know, there's only one issue left, but this is my favorite series. And this issue, it's all been team-ups after the very beginning of the series. And this issue, it's the Nightwing team-up. And since this is out of continuity, he's still Nightwing and he's still Dick Grayson.
You know what? I hadn't put that together until now, but it's amazing that this wasn't the pick of the week given that content. Go on.
This was one of the best Batman Nightwing team-ups in years. It was incredibly fun. There was a terrific double-page spread in the middle where they do a fight through a boat. I think it's a boat or wherever
they are.
Yeah, it's a boat.
Yeah. Submarine that sticks out of the...
There's great storytelling going on
that
there.
That helicopter they're flying up from the side looks a heck of a lot like the Mask one.
Wow.
You know what I'm talking about? Miles Mayhem's turned into a jet?
Yeah.
Sorry.
You pulled that out from deep inside.
Yep.
They finally confront Vandal Savage and the Fabergé egg, and it is opened up, and what was inside was a legitimate surprise, and then legitimately made the issue weird and cool, and led to a fun ending and then a fun cliffhanger, which ties in a little bit maybe to what we talked about with Batman Annual last week or the week before, with Batman being at the edge of the universe.
Right. Yeah, maybe. we've talked about Nick Darrington to death, and I think that all those points have been made, and it's lovely to look at. And that fight, that two-page spread fight through the ship, was super cool.
If you're a Nick Darrington fan, he also drew about 7 pages of Young Justice this week.
No shit.
Yeah, in the flashback to Ginny Hex's beginnings. It was good.
You get Bendis on your side like that, and you're going to work. We're going to see a lot of you. I mean, I can't say I was a Mike Diodato fan, but once Bendis took a shine to him, the dude was everywhere. I think that the thing that comes out of this one that's fun to me is that it pulls back on the Grim Batman,
mm-hmm. Yep.
At least in the context of his family.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I like that a lot. I think it makes more sense in, you know, the family context of this character than when he is with the Justice League, or at least, you know, the Prime guys, or definitely when he's with Alfred or any of these people, that, you know, he can just act like a normal person and let down that mask a little bit.
Yep.
And I think that that is much more compelling.
Yeah, I'd rather read this kind of Batman right now.
Yes. Yeah.
Grim, dark Batman can be fun, but, like, we talk about Superman having a personality, and he's better that way. And Batman also, you know, joking with Nightwing about his big boy pants was fun.
Yeah, and it makes it more compelling right now, I guess. Listen, we all had fun when Grant Morrison had Batman lurking around behind the Justice League even when they were talking. Right. And it was a fun story when we find out that Batman has files on everybody and you know, but for him to just have even – I'm making a little pinchy finger, but an iota of self-awareness, mm-hmm. which, by the way, anybody this intelligent would have for the most part. But I like that. I like how loose he is. And it's a way that you would think that Bendis wouldn't necessarily be good with Batman, because he would be too, like, having him say Yiddish jokes and shit like that.
Yeah.
But no, he can do it. It's fun.
This series is terrific. Between this and books like Superman Smashes the Klan, like, out-of-continuity stuff can be really good. And people, for the most part, ignore it because it's not part of the tapestry. But this is the kind of great storytelling you get when you're not worried that Dick Grayson is now Rick Grayson and has amnesia, and you just tell a great story. It was really good. It was one of the best issues of the series so far, and it's already had 3 picks of the week.
Yep.
Also loved Legion of Superheroes number 1, Brian Bendis again, and Ryan Sook.
It's such a treat. Like, I saw Sook's name on the cover, and I was like, oh, that's nice. He'll have done some pages. You know, but no, he drew the whole damn thing.
He drew the whole thing. He inked a lot of it. Wade Von Grobbadger is a great inker, inked some of it, which changed the way it looked a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily a bad way, just not as beautiful as when Sook does it. When Sook draws it and inks it, it's a wonder to behold, but it's still really good when Grobbadger does it. But this was the first issue of the new series we've been leading up to, with the Millennium story we loved, in which Superboy goes to the future and joins the Legion. And here, it's mostly a intro to the... There's not really a lot of conflict. It's mostly just him getting a tour and meeting the team and finding out about Earth.
And not watching the presentation.
Right, definitely not watching the... We made this deck. A little chasey in the beginning, but it's a minor one through New Gotham. And I've never really read any Legion books. I think we obviously read the one that came out of New 52, but probably would read one issue of that. I probably read less than 10 issues in my entire multi-decades run on comics. I've never been a Legion fan or a person, but this was right up my alley. We talked about this. This is Bendis' only team book here at DC. So this is him juggling a lot of characters, a lot of dialogue, a lot of overlapping talking.
It's really interesting because it seems really pretty obvious that, like, boy, this is exactly the book for him. Mm-hmm. And it's never been considered, like, a hip, cool property.
No.
And so maybe, like, I never made that connection. But, it, like, if there was ever a point where he, you know, can just sort of, like, here's 1,000 different characters who are all going to stand together all the time. And most of the time when you're doing that's stupid. You know, that's like, I remember, I think it was a Secret War, the Skrull one.
And Secret Invasion.
Yeah, Secret Invasion was just too many people always standing there talking with each other all the time, and it didn't work. But it actually works in this because it's kind of ridiculous. I think the odd choice is that we have just said that Ryan Sook is very, very good, but he's not known as the – I don't know if it's speed or if it doesn't want to do that much, but he's not the most productive artist in terms of volume. How's that? Is that politically
that's fair.
Correct enough? And so you give him a book with 1,000 characters and cities everywhere. And I was like, well, that's a weird choice for that.
Yeah, I mean, the over-under in this is like 2.5 issues.
Oh, I know. This is like Jim Lee. It's that level.
It looks beautiful. I don't know the last time I saw Ryan Sook draw this much interior.
Me neither.
But the opening scene with the heist where Karate Kid and... The main problem is that they don't really introduce all these characters to us that well.
Yeah. You know what? I'm trying to remember. There's another book that we are going to talk about this week where I did have that specific problem. I said, there's too much here. It doesn't bother me in this because I feel like there's so many of them. It's like the Voltron with the vehicles.
Right.
Like, you can't keep them all straight, but you know what they are.
I guess it's really helpful for Superboy because everyone walks around with a little identifier hanging around them.
That's helpful for every single person on this book, except Dave Sharp, the letterer.
But also, that's mostly they're backwards and behind other people, and you can't read them.
Yeah.
I also like how much it ties into the old DC universe. I don't know how much the traditional Legion books did that. I don't know that did it at all. But here, the heist was for Aquaman's Trident, which they hope can refill the oceans because there's no more oceans and Earth is just a bunch of city-states around a core, sort of.
And it should be, like, maybe we're going around, like, looked really pretty, the dialogue was fun or whatever. That concept at the middle of this, that the Earth is not what it was, and sort of the imagination that it took to sort of construct, you know, that device that is the Earth now, is and even how it was revealed. It's great. That's big time sci-fi imagination stuff. Like, that's good stuff. I mean, I was really impressed by that.
I also liked Jonathan's anxiety about being in a bottled city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a nice little character moment. Well, this was great. Yeah, this was really great.
Yep.
This is everything I was hoping it would be.
That, what's funny is that, like, the two issues, the Legion, you know, prequels.
Yeah.
You know, those were all about Rose, and she got, I think, a panel.
I didn't even notice her.
There was one point where she tried to get his attention.
Was that her?
It's at the bottom of page 14. She's like, "Hi, Mr. Kent. My name is Rose. I'll be right back." Shoots off. She's on that page in every panel.
Hmm.
She might be in some of the others, but, you know, that's the whole ball game right there.
Right.
And they, you know, they're like, that's patient. That's really patient stuff.
Well, he's a long-term planner. We know that.
Yes. And I love that.
And finally, Superman Up in the Sky number 5. I thought was the best issue of this series, which we've been really enjoying. There's a world where this is the pick of the week.
Mm-hmm.
This was the companion book to Batman Universe. This is the Walmart books, out of continuity. This is Tom King and Andy Kubert. Two stories per issue for this book as opposed to Batman. And in the first one, he is trying to make a deal with Darkseid, the traditional awesome badass-looking Kirby Darkseid version.
He is.
Not the terrible whatever the hell they're doing to him in the regular DC continuity. He has to break his oath and murder someone, in this case, this creature who is already dying and has a special knife that only the knife can kill him. And he's talking to the creature and telling him a story about how he got there. And I thought this was great. And then at the end, he doesn't do it. He breaks his oath by breaking his oath by lying, which is also his oath. And then the second story is, it's almost like the Batman Annual from last week we talked about again. It's almost like a day in the life of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's running around doing all kinds of things. He's at Luther's trial. He's doing reporter work. He's hanging out having lunch with Batman and Wonder Woman on the rooftops.
Takes Lois to the moon, saving a cat. I don't understand the end of it, and I was wondering if this was related to the first bit of it, or did none of that happen, or was it in his head? This is not a complaint.
I don't know. Well, I guess that's the cliffhanger, yeah. I guess, because next issue is also the final issue. Either way, even take away that page, I just loved both of these stories so much. There's a part where Superman's on the roof of the Daily Planet, like for the sunrise, and I was like, God damn it, that's Superman.
The thing that I thought was impressive with, and by the way, I'm going to go ahead and say this is easily my favorite Andy Kubert that I've seen ever. I mean, really just top notch through the whole thing. Really sort of blend of modern and classic, and I think it works really well. The art in The Offer, part 10, is wonderful. But what really stands out to me is the prose. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we forget, but we might not remember that Tom King was, his first stuff was novel writing before he got into comics. And it's funny because it's a weird backdoor to get into, but like, he really wanted to be a comic writer because he hasn't written any more novels since then, as opposed to Charles Soule, other way around. But there's a bit where he's talking about Lois, you know, about what's great about her. She's arguing with Perry about how something is and she's going to be right. And then he goes back to work and he talks about how he writes. And he says, "Succinct, informative with a dash of poetry." Pa's voice. That's what you'd want. How would Pa say it? Yeah, that's nice. Like, it's the journalistic side. And that's a thought I've never had. Like, right. He's a writer and he's a reporter. Yeah. So he does think about writing and how he writes. So he has to have a dash of poetry unless he's a terrible reporter.
Right.
And I love that, you know, Big Blue Boy Scout, whatever. Nope. he's a writer, and like that's a really interesting thing that you'd think that more writers who write Superman would sort of figure out.
It's a thing that's totally sidelined in Superman's
story. It is.
But he is a writer.
So the story matters. The way it's said matters. And that shined a little context on this character that I've never thought of before. And I think that's really interesting. He did it in one panel. A really lovely prose all through this whole thing.
It was a great issue. I finished reading my books and I was like, oh, God, fuck. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I had comics I legitimately loved. And any other week they would have won. And it was really tough. It was one of the times where you really hate having to pick only one comic.
I think I didn't have as many books as you. I think I had 16, 17, something like that. Not small, but manageable. There were a lot of books I liked.
Yeah,
I'd say that there, for me, there were a lot of four starsy kind of things. There were a bunch of books when we were making the script. I was like, oh, I like that. And I was like, I don't really have anything new to say about it. You know, there was that kind of going on. But I don't know. I think that's a better problem than I have no idea what to talk about.
Oh, it's a good problem. But it's also frustrating because you want to be able to give the blue ribbon to all the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you can't. So we've been on a good X-Men streak, Josh. We've been excited by the X-Men books. We had X-Men and we had Excalibur. And the other one that I can't remember.
Marauders?
But Marauders. That was pick of the week. And then this week we got two new ones. X-Force number one from Benjamin Percy and Joshua Cassara. And then New Mutants number one from Ed Brisson and Jonathan Hickman and art by Rod Reiss. Or Reese. I didn't like either one.
I only read one of them. Would you like to guess which?
I'm going to say New Mutants.
I did read New Mutants. That's correct. I didn't read X-Force because I didn't notice until it was too late. But then when I looked at it, I thought, should I emergency read this? And I thought, I don't want to read this. So you're saying that was fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
What's the quick pitch? What's the story? What's the deal?
X-Force is in the name, you know, in the old days, X-Force was the more militant badass team that does the wet work, you know, the stuff that the other X-Men won't do. And here, it was weird because... Actually, I kind of wish you had with this one, because we'd been setting up this whole idea that Krakoa was this impenetrable fortress, and you basically couldn't get there, and it was a safe paradise for the mutants. And here in the first issue, it's invaded by a bunch of gunmen, and there's a fight on the island, and they have to kill them. And then at the end, the cliffhanger, we gave you a spoiler warning, is that Professor Xavier shot in the head. And the last picture is his giant helmet cracked and broken on the ground with a bullet hole in the middle.
That's a sort of a 50-50 win-lose situation.
I didn't love the art. And Dean White's the colorist. He's a good colorist. I didn't love the way it was colored. And it just seemed weird to undercut the scenario so quickly in that these four mercenaries are, you know, basically parachute into the island. And we just spent all these comics talking about how Krakoa was this impenetrable X-Men paradise. And it was just weird. And then Kitty Pryde's Marauders team makes a brief cameo in a completely different boat, which was strange. Like a tugboat.
That would have been funnier.
It was a weird comic. I didn't like the way it looked.
Because then you could call the book Kate and her Tugboat Crew.
Tugging ain't easy.
Tugging ain't easy when you're phasing.
So, wait, was it? Yeah, it was this one she was in, right? Yeah, because you would have talked about the other issue.
Yeah. I might not have. That's not
true. It's this one. And they're smuggling in, like, black market stuff to the island, which it was all weird. I didn't like it.
So like I'm genuinely looking at New Mutants again to remember what it was.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know what? I know why I grabbed it. I grabbed it because Rod Reiss.
Right.
He's good. Whose art I really like. And I get it mixed up with Ivan Reiss, whose art I don't love as much. Very different thing. And so I liked that. I think it looked really beautiful. It looked different than the other books. It's sort of, I don't even know how to describe that guy, but it's a lot of different things going on. Really good faces. But I don't know any of these characters. And as I kept going through it, I thought, oh, I've heard of a lot of these and I don't care. So I thought there were things about it that were fun on paper, going into space with... the Starjammer people, the Cyclops' dad for some reason.
Yeah.
Just the weirdest thing that doesn't make sense. I thought there was a lot of really good stuff in it. In fact, as far as a Hickman book goes, and I don't think he scripted it.
No, I don't think so either.
It was pretty straightforward and entertaining. The Corsair looked the most ridiculous looking. It's such a ridiculous character. And I can't help but appreciate it for that. But at the end of the day, I didn't learn anything about anybody.
That was the problem we had when the New Mutants book was the patron pick a few weeks ago, where we didn't know the characters, we didn't really care about the characters, and I kept having to flip back to the beginning to find out their names, because it didn't tell you really in the course of the book so much as it tells you in the roster rundown in the beginning, and then I don't know what their powers are, I don't know. You know, like I've never been a New Mutants person, so I don't know these characters at all, and they didn't really do a good job of explaining it if they're hoping to get any people who weren't New Mutants fans. And it was not a bad comic.
No, this, yeah,
like,
it wasn't.
If you can look past that, and hopefully many people can, then you probably really enjoyed it and looking forward to more. But for me, I just was like, I don't know why I care. And also, I never really loved the mutants in space angle. I know that's been a major part of the X-Men history, but a lot of that happened in and around my X-Men reading. So I've not really been a mutants in space kind of guy. And the New Mutants characters I don't even know, or having space adventures with the Starjammers is not really a concept I'm really into. So,
but you're right. Like, there were some really entertaining and good scenes. You know, it was fine. But end of the day, you know, that's a great show. I'm not watching it.
Yeah, there's already a lot of comics.
There you go. This is the thing I'm working on. And I've gotten better at it, whether you're like, no, that book's good. And I'm like, that's great. I still don't want to read it. I can, you know, and this isn't really even that. But you got to do it with TV shows, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of everything.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, if you're a fan of the show Daybreak, speaking of TV shows, or if you just love learning how to survive in a teen-filled post-apocalyptic world, which, I mean, I don't even know how to survive in a regular teen world, you're going to need to subscribe to this new podcast. It's called The Only Podcast Left, and it's Netflix's first fictional podcast. They're moving into the fictional podcast world now, Josh. They're everywhere. It's The Only Podcast Left in this post-apocalyptic world.
Ooh, they're definitely not going to be able to stop.
So, yeah, exactly. You can't podfit in The Only One Left. So here's what it's all about. It's set in the world of Daybake. Daybake. It's where they bake cookies.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about California.
It's set in the world of Daybreak, written by showrunner Aaron Colette, I think, starring Tessa Netting, Kyle Sherman, Kimia Bipurnia, and Jared Goldstein. And meet your hosts, the AV Club. They're a group of kids who survive the apocalypse by using their skills to rig cameras and spy on warring tribes all over Glendale. And now they're making a show about it, while juggling their own personal drama and trying to stay alive as mutant pugs, ghoulies, and a mysterious new tribe all try to kill their vibe. It's not cool, ghoulies. Meet members of the LARP Lords, the Donut Hoes, the STEM Punks, these are all great names, and more in their Tribe Spotlight segment. I would be a member of the Donut Hoes.
Forget it, Connor. It's just Glendale.
That's great. Those are really great names. And this podcast is full of spoilers, so make sure you watch the whole show on Netflix before pressing play on this podcast, and you might just find out what happens after the end of Daybreak Season 1, featuring Daybreak cast member Austin Kroot in a special guest appearance as Wesley Fists of Fury. The Only Podcast Left is available now on Spotify. Remember, was it last week we talked about the Death or Glory?
Yes. I mean, I saw it, and I squinted a little, like somebody that you thought you recognized at the mall but then weren't sure.
Right. I was like, oh, what happened to that book? And here it is, Death and Glory number 6. And I was a little torn, Josh, because, you know, I don't even remember how many months it's been since the last issue. I barely remember what happened in it. And
you're saying you barely went for it then. You were like,
yeah. Generally speaking, I don't like to reward that behavior. And I realize that these comics, the Image books, are done on their spare time, and I get that, and I understand that. I'm not a monster. But also, like, I'm supposed to read these things periodically. I need some commitment here to schedule, because I can't remember everything.
Uh-huh.
But I thought, all right, I'll give this a go. And I know Remender does a pretty in-depth recap thing, and I basically remembered what was happening. And
yeah, I didn't find that was a problem once I got going.
And then by the end of it, I really enjoyed it, so I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know. I'm on the fence about this one. I don't know that he's given me a thing to grab onto, other than the fact that I really like looking at Bengal's work.
Mm-hmm. Bengal's terrific.
Yeah.
I think it was the cliffhanger. So this is, you know, the community people who live off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a whole human trafficking scenario in the first 5 issues. And here they've had to escape. They have to go to Mexico to get her dad's surgery done because they can't do it in the U.S. because they're wanted. And so they have to get the help of the coyotes to get across the border, ironically, and they go to their, like, hidden little village town, and that looks fun.
Yeah.
I think I'll give it one more issue to see.
I think that's fair. There's stuff here that's good. I really just like the iconography of her, like, racing stripes and everything with that stuff. I think it looks real good.
There was a lot of speechifying.
There was.
Almost more than dialogue.
And a very Garth Ennis-like villain.
Yeah.
I felt. And that part, I was like, yeah, I don't know if that one's working for me, but
I'm definitely going to give another issue.
Yes. Death or Glory. It's just another story. It's a Clash song, people. That's what he's referring to. All of his comics are based on punk songs. Wonder Twins number 9. I mean, we've talked about this before. I think we have in a little bit, though. The thing that's creeping in with it, I think, is that the weight that he managed to put in, like the part where you're starting to see that, you know, like in not Droopy, the Snagglepuss.
Droopy. Yeah.
I love Droopy. How it is, like, there's just so much more there than it appears. It's so easy to make this guy slapstick funny humor guy, but, you know, then he hits you with a sad elephant in a closet.
That's what makes him great, is that he's not just a funny guy. He's very good at layering in this whole other thing happening behind the scenes that comes to the forefront at the perfect moment, and then it gets you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also just has real world, you know, analog. Like, all of a sudden the story is telling you something about your world at the same time, too. I think it's actually related to that last episode of Silicon Valley that I saw, where, you know, the one guy has all the money and it's because his father was into some bad shit. And this sort of talks about that, too. But this really is about the shame of the Wonder Twins' grandfather and what he did on their world and sort of their secret origin kind of thing, you know. And it's probably not a very common question, but it's a real question, you know. And Superman comes and talks to her about it, you know, in the middle of eating a burrito, which is all he wanted to do, by the way. He just came to microwave his burrito.
Also, they need to get an oven in Hall of Justice, because there's no reason why he has to microwave that burrito and turn it into big mush.
Well,
just put it in the oven in some tin foil.
I don't know if you've noticed this. He has heat vision.
Well, that's gonna say, wrap it up in tin foil, put some heat vision on it. You got yourself a muffin. Not a muffin. A burrito.
Then you've had this whole, you got this whole created an AI thing, which is a big mustache and a monocle, and he always says, "Hello, yo!" And it's very funny, and it's just good.
I'm just waiting for the great scramble to happen. It almost happened.
The one great thing about Mark Russell, and I don't know that he knew enough to engineer this at the beginning, but I think he might now, he's always got one good, consistent artist. All of his stories, all of his sort of great series have had one great artist on it. Well, someone who is not a household name, someone you don't necessarily know, who just came on and did exactly the right thing.
Right.
The way through. Yep. Kept it consistent. That's amazing.
Yeah. The other thing is, on page 23, are power sockets upside down like that anywhere in America?
I mean, theoretically, you could just install them that way. Just no one does. It doesn't make a difference to their function. I'm sometimes shocked that the person who built my house put them right side up, because that's about it. I'd say much more terrible on this page is the weird perspective around the computer in panel 3.
Mm.
Look at that nightmare of vanishing. It's not right. None of that's right.
Well, it's an old computer.
No. That's the drawing. You know it. Moving along. Dr. Doom number 2 was one pick of the week, or not a patron pick?
No,
I mean,
better. I think it was. We talked almost about it, no matter what.
Yeah, and we both really liked it. And when I started this one out, I thought, did I like this? And then I had to remember what it was, because it is one of those non-continuity things. And I think Doom is starting to show up in a bunch of stuff. I think I read this.
Doom
the same
was in
like, I read
at least 3 books this week.
Yeah, so that sort of makes it a little tougher. But again, I don't know if this is out of continuity or not.
It's in continuity, but it's not really.
Right.
Yeah.
But whatever. I'm reading a story that has nothing to do with anything else. And once that locks in, I'm always sort of like, good, anything can happen. You know, I'm fine with that. And then again, I forgot that Kang had showed up in that. So we got a surprise Kang. I was like, oh, Kang time. And he has a Lego notch on his head, which is nice.
Kangas Ex Machina. He shows up right at the right time to save the day for Doom whenever he needs it.
Then it got kind of weird. He goes to see Morgan Le Fay, who's in Queens. He's got a burrito also. Something's going on with that. But it was just silly enough, the way that they were talking to each other. I was like, this is – and Morgan Le Fay was just in the Excalibur book last week.
Yeah.
Totally different. And this was – I don't know. It was just enjoyable. It's stupid. Herbie's
– the woman he puts in charge of that very last week or last month, whenever these books come out. I don't even – what's her name?
Victorious.
She was in another book, too.
Oh.
It must have been Fantastic Four or something like that. But
I think so, yeah.
She was on TV as the ruler of Latveria. So it is in continuity, but it's just sort of to the side.
It's confusing.
I don't love the art, as we talked about, the LaRocca faces.
Yeah. For LaRocca, though, it's not bad. Those bits with Morgan Le Fay and Queens are really pretty well done.
Yeah. I like it. It's fun.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's just offbeat enough that it's interesting.
So my problem with the Green Lantern, Black Stars, number 1, Grant Morrison, Hermenico. This is a offshoot side miniseries to this Green Lantern book that Morrison is doing. I think it's taking its place until the book comes back. I didn't like the Black Stars story in Green Lantern. So that's true. Now it's like, well, now you get a whole book about it. It felt like I was having a bad trip. Like I was high on the wrong stuff, on some bad shit.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably pretty good. It was a lot of that Grant Morrison imagination, monster space stuff. But then you don't really get the Hal Jordan who we've been hanging out with because he's under deep cover.
Yep.
So like it's having a hard time where he's standing. And then like what do you stake your claim to here? And I don't know what.
Nothing to ground the craziness. You need something to ground it before it was Hal. And now it's just all turned to 11 here.
Yeah, all the elements are here. Not something that I would necessarily read, but I thought the art was really nice. Whoever Zermenico is,
he's real good, and he's someone who comes in and fills in. And but like he or she or they is very good.
Yeah. We don't even know, you know. And it's Grant Morrison. It wasn't impenetrable or anything, but ultimately, like I need some of that humor. I need something.
Yeah, I
was
really
a little more humanity.
The Green Lantern book, and it had a lot of humor in it. This is just sort of like all the stuff that I was barely hanging on to in the other book. Now starring in its own series, it's like
right, yeah.
It was 100%. That was rough, which is a bummer. But those are the books we wanted to talk about. There's a lot of books we could have talked about more, but we have a very taskmasting producer who wants us to keep it to an hour. But let's talk about the patron pick, who is voted on by the patrons themselves. Every patron gets to vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, the voting was very much in line with this week, in which there was a lot of books voted for because there was a lot of choices. And so therefore, not a lot of books got a lot of different votes, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but the runaway winner was Undiscovered Country, number one from Image Comics. Scott Snyder and Charles Soule are the co-writers. Giuseppe Cavancoli and Danielle Orlandini are on the art. Matt Wilson and Crank.
It's not a weak team.
No. So this is the story of a bunch of European and Asian and African soldiers and scientists and scholars and diplomats in this helicopter who are flying to the U.S. on an invitation to come parlay, which is crazy because the U.S. basically walled itself off from the world 30 years ago, and no one's seen the inside. No one knows what's going on in there. And they get in, and they're immediately attacked and now are stranded in the U.S. amidst warring tribes and warring factions, and no one knows what's real or who's in charge. That's the general premise of the
book. I'd say that's correct.
Did you read the long essay in the back?
No. I read some of it.
Where it came from and them visiting DARPA and the CIA and all that stuff.
No, but that doesn't surprise me. I got to say, at the end, I didn't need more information.
It's a bummer because the premise I love. I love this kind of premises. Like, you know, kind of speculative future, real world premise. You know, what happens if the U.S. builds giant fucking walls with turrets and guns and this crazy air shield, which apparently is based on something they saw at DARPA, that keeps everybody out. And that's an interesting premise. And now if they had landed there and it had been like DMZ where it was grounded in the real world and felt terrifying because it was grounded in the real world, that would have been one thing. But then there's all these like Mad Max mutants and creatures and you know, it's like, oh, that's disappointing.
I would say I jumped off before then. Couple of reasons. Some are subjective, some are objective. Mm-hmm. I had mentioned this earlier. I think there was way too many people and way too much going on that we were just thrown into. And I think that these two writers are too good to let that happen because there was the doctor lady who I kind of got a hold on, but I didn't even think I realized that they weren't American. I lost my bearings early on.
Yeah.
Because it starts 12 nautical miles from the coast of California, which to me seems like that's America.
They were coming to America.
Yeah, I know. I know. But that's sort of where I had placed myself at the beginning. So I guess Alliance, Euro, Athens. Oh, there was an Athens. See, I just missed little bits of it. But honestly, if you back up, I'm looking at a two-page spread right now. It's just masses of word balloons. Mm-hmm. And I get that there's a lot going on and we have to be explained, but it was too much. Literally, I was hit with too much and without giving me a grounding point of a person who I wanted to follow around. I had a really hard time with that. In fact, I started like, was it page 14, 15, this double-page spread. It's just too much. Like, I wasn't even having fun reading. I was pushing my way through it. And I love Giuseppe Cavancoli, and I love Matt Wilson. And I think that, you know, other than that one two-page spread where the helicopter sort of comes up to the wall for the first time, that was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, I want them to slow down or figure out a different way to get into it. I think that's an objective thing. The subjective thing is that unless I'm being completely and 100% wowed, I don't want to know what could go wrong. I am not in the mood for that kind of story at all right now. And I know why it's happening right now. And it's the thumb on the pulse. And it is, you know, the rip from the headlines. And this is the thing that people are thinking about. It's totally true. And when Neal Stephenson did it for three glorious pages in Fall, it was beautiful and amazing. And, you know, in this, I just thought, oh, this isn't quite as good a version of that thing. And it's just depressing.
I understand. In a way.
And that is totally subjective. And this is a valid thing. There's good ideas in here, but it's a mishmash of stuff, and I didn't pick up a thread yet.
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right about there not being like a through line where we have this helicopter full of characters, and you don't really know them, and you don't really like them.
Right.
They're all bickering and dicks to each other, and
yeah, and like to be interested in. You can be interested in a character you don't like. Right. But I wasn't interested or liked anyone.
They're also all dressed weird. Like that. The only downside to Cameron Coley, who certainly not alone in this, is that drawing people in regular clothes is a challenge for some comic artists. They all looked like they were uncomfortable and ill-fitting in their clothing. Again, for me, and my subjective thing is, I would like this to have been, you know, on the ground as opposed to whatever that flying shark is that guy's on. And, you know, when the Mad Max people show up and...
He looks like he's on the ground. I was like, why is a shark dragging itself along the ground?
Right. And I get that they were talking in the essay about how everything in here is extrapolating on something they learned about visiting the CIA and DARPA. But still, it's just like, I don't know, it's just not as interesting to me when the guy's on a mutant bison.
I know that at the end of that, I got to, you know, three pages of text and I was like, I don't got that in me. It says Charles and I, so that means that Scott wrote it.
Yep.
You know, he's got a remarkable need to explain himself. And I want the work to stand for itself a little more.
Well, that's also an image thing. Every book has an explainer.
I know. And I get that. And it's fine. And Rucka does it. I don't read it when he does it. And I love that book that I can't think of the name of. She the Girl. You know, anytime.
Doesn't narrow it down.
Yeah. No, the Rucka book about the Lazarus.
Lazarus, yeah.
You know, I don't read any of that stuff at the end. Like, I want it to be in the text of the thing. If I want to read, you know, extra stuff, then that's optional. So I usually don't. Yeah, I like, you know, I'm guessing this will get more enjoyable when it coalesces a little bit. But I also just feel like it's been covered a lot. And I don't know that I'm interested in this kind of story again.
I understand.
You think?
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
My subjective problem is different than your subjective problem, but it's still a subjective problem.
I don't disagree with your thing. I just didn't even get to that.
Right. I understand.
Yeah.
So let's do a rating on Undiscovered Country number one. Ratings out of 5.
It's like a super group that got together and made a band you were super excited about. And then you're like, I don't know, this is all working together.
2.75.
I was very similar on you there. I was like 2.5 seems too low. 3 seems too high. I'm going to echo you there.
All right. Now, the real question, are you going to read number 2? Are you sticking with it?
Probably.
Interesting. I would have thought you were in dead no on that.
I you know, I like these guys. Mm-hmm. I want to like the thing they're doing. I want to like it. So, I, you know, depends on the week. I've found that I stick with things longer than I want to. And then I'll get to one week where I just go, you know what? This is it. I'm calling. I did that on Immortal Hulk.
Yeah.
I think the last time an issue came out, I was like, all right, I'm gonna. You know what? I'm not going to read it. And then this week, I downloaded it again, and I thought, you know, I didn't read the last. You know, I'm not going to read it. I'm not going to do it. and I
think it's going to depend on the week that comes out.
Yes.
If it's a heavy week like this one again, then I don't know that I'm going to. But I may. I may, because I didn't dislike it intensely, but I also didn't love it. So I don't know. We'll find out. We'll see. So that's the Patreon pick over at patreon.com/ifanboy. Any patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. Thanks to all who do. But if you give it the $5 or higher level, you're a special patron who gets a special superpower, and we do it live on the show, so let's thank the patrons.
Ross Moore has a very unique power. Mm-hmm. If you are a person, doesn't matter your career, what your status is, and you walk up to Ross Moore, he will wave his hand in front of you, and he will be able to tell whether you have a Netflix development deal in you.
In your soul?
Yeah. So I've had this story, and he's like, it's never going to happen. And then somebody else is just like, I don't even have a story. And he goes, find it. You have a Netflix development deal in you. And so he can divine whether people will get one. And, you know, it's about 70% of people in the United States.
Sure.
So, you know, it's not super hard for him to guess. But if, you know, if you were like, should I write this script? You get yourself around Ross. He'd be like, yeah, no, don't do it. Don't do it. But then he looks at you and he sort of squints and he goes, Hulu. and you can go there.
No, it's not just Netflix. It's any development deal.
I mean, he's not as good with the other ones.
A streaming deal.
Yeah, it is Netflix censored, but he's learned a lot in his time. You know, so like
the strange tugging feeling on his to the side means it's what are the other ones? Amazon.
Some Scream picks. I don't know what that is, but I know I pay for it, and I don't know how, why. I don't want it.
Ruari Dixon, I think. Ruari. I hope that's correct.
Ruari.
Oh, or close. Ruari is a minor healer. So what Ruari can do is heal anything that is minor and not life-threatening. So for instance, Josh, if you stubbed your toe, or you slept wrong and you had a crick in your neck.
Every day.
Yeah. That doesn't seem to go away in our age, does it?
No.
You know, like bruise your tailbone or whacked your shin on a table. Anything like minor like that.
How is he with plantar fasciitis?
Well, if it's a big quality of life issue, it really depends. Uh-huh. Well, almost like Ross is feeling the deal.
Right.
Or has to feel if this is too major of an issue.
I like that it's got low aspirations.
Yeah, it's just like, no, I can only... Like, if you had just got a splinter, could have healed that.
But it got a small infection, so you
get this out could here. Lead to something serious, so no, you gotta go see that.
That's good. Brandon Lee, and yes, I am going to avoid the obvious things I could say here. If he's ever in a situation and he yells, top of his lungs, calm the fuck down, everyone does.
Ooh. But only that phrase?
Yeah, and he's got to yell it top of his lungs, which, by the way, in real life does not make people calm down. If you see it in movies a lot where like a bunch of people be arguing and then the one character be like, shut the fuck up, and then everyone goes, huh? And they calm down. That does not work in real life unless you're Brandon Lee.
Right.
It does. Calm the fuck down. And everyone's like, oh, all right, cool. It's as if everybody just done a meditation session or something like that.
Jared Blanchard, this is actually somewhat similar to Ross Moore. Jared Blanchard can look at anyone and see a little floating power level, but what it measures is how much that person likes Jared Blanchard.
Oh, wow, that's useful.
It's not just romantic, sexual, although it could be, but it's also like, you know, as a person or a coworker or whatever their relationship is, you know, how much does this person like me? And he sees it on like a video game power level next to them.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Is it an empirical, like it is an unqualified number, like say it's a 1 to 100, mm-hmm. but it's not necessarily clear how that is applied? Because right. There's different ways to like people.
It's a bar, and the bar could be full or halfway full or down at the bottom if it's, you know, someone that really doesn't like Jared. But and he could use that to try to help raise the bar.
Well, that was my other question. Yeah. Is it an inherent value?
Well, he can, you know, anything you do to make someone like you more, you can do, and the bar can like you more, so the bar can go up.
Okay, so you're saying it's not that like affinity is not faded,
and it's not static. It's moving. It's like anything, you know, people's opinions or feelings change. So, if you tell a bad joke, all the bars in the room might go down a little bit, or just a little bit, not even like a lot, but like
Oh wow, like it'd be like if you said the phrase. I'm not racist, but
right,
and you just see all the bars go boom.
Except for the one guys, and then you're like, oh, shit.
It would spike. You'd be like, fuck, Gene likes me.
Yeah. So those are the patron powers. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Give it the $5 high level. You can get your own power live on the show, just like these three's four.
You know what I'm going to do? Mm-hmm. As soon as we're done with this, I'm going to go over to the bathroom, which is, I want to say, about 10 feet to my right. Uh-huh. Take a shower. Let it get nice, hot, steamy in there. Then I'm going to take up my Harry's blade. I'm going to clean things up. That's what I'm going to do.
Get yourself right.
You got to get yourself right. Yeah. And the thing is, I'm not going to have to worry after that like, oh, it gave me an ingrown hair, some razor bumps or anything like that. It doesn't happen. I don't really have that problem anymore. And I think that's pretty great. Humans for thousands of years have been shaving, and they have had that problem. The secret to great shave has not changed very much. The ancient Greeks didn't need flex balls or heated handles, and neither do you. That's why Harry's doesn't overcharge and add gimmicky features to their razors. They focus on delivering what actually matters, sharp, durable blades, and this is important, at a fair price. I like my Harry's. I was initially attracted by the rubbery orange handle. I'm going to say, oh, I like, but I, that looks better than the other one that I'm using now. But it turns out that the whole system was a lot better than that. And now I have a whole suite of products. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest. I like many of the products. In fact, I'm low on my face lotion slash sunblock stuff.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I got to go get some more of that. And you can get it now in certain stores, not just mail order. But probably the easiest thing is still just order directly from them over at Harrys.com. They are returned to essentials. Quality durable blades at a fair price. $2 a blade. There is no middleman. Manufactured blades in their own German blade factory. They've been making precision blades for a century. It says here they have been honing precision blades, which is a word I like very much. That means you get incredibly high quality blades at factory direct prices. Super convenient. Blade refills are delivered directly on your schedule to your door, with or without a subscription. You choose. There's no risk. If you try Harry's out, you don't love your shave, let them know. They'll give you a full refund. People who are listening to the sound of my voice right now, you can get your trial set from Harry's at harrys.com/ifanboy. In that, you will get a weighted ergonomic handle with a firm grip. The weighted is important, mm-hmm, because otherwise you see the disposables that don't have the weight. I'm shaking my head at you and raising my eyebrows like you can see me. That's no good. That's going to cause a slip and a movement. You don't want that. Weighted ergonomic handle, firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade. Never underestimate that lubricating strip.
That's true.
It works. There's a rich lathering shave gel in there with aloe in it. Aloe is the most magical thing that's ever grown out of the ground. And yes, I know that there's people who have different opinions on that, but I mean it. It will keep your skin hydrated. And there's a travel blade cover, which is the coup de grace on this whole thing. Keeps your razor dry, easy to grab onto on the go. Shove your hand in that bag without fear.
That's true.
The blade will be covered. It's not coming off. You're fine. Go to harrys.com/ifanboy to start shaving better today.
Quick email.
What?
Carl says, I just watched The Game Changers on Netflix. This episode's brought to you by Netflix. This is one of those who puts air in the Batmobile's tires type of questions, but they're fun to discuss. Do you think Batman keeps up on the latest athletic science to stay at peak performance, or is he more of a gifted athlete?
I think we're going to be in agreement on this.
Oh, interesting. What do you think?
I think it's the former. But also, he's probably ahead of a lot of that science on his own.
He's got techniques that you don't even know about.
Some other kind of techniques.
I think he doesn't have time for any of that nonsense. He just gets by on rage.
Really?
I'm sure. I mean, he doesn't really eat well. He's never eaten the food that Alfred puts out for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's not on steroids. He's not doing the stretches. He doesn't have a foam roller.
So you don't think he's like one of those Marines who cleans his gun and knows how to keep it all tip-top shape? Like that's his body's his weapon, so he's just getting by on hoping his metabolism doesn't fail?
You see him doing exercise, and you see him like
right
in the Batcave and stuff, but he doesn't really have time for that. Mostly he gets by on psychotic rage.
I feel like that would be part of the whole investigation thing and making sure that he can do the job.
Maybe.
And especially in regards to the fact that he doesn't eat well and doesn't sleep enough.
Right.
That's the thing, like, we're going to say that Batman doesn't have a superpower. I don't think that's true. You will fall apart. You just will. I mean, force of will and gifted bodily constraints are certainly a thing. But especially as Batman approaches his early middle age.
His dotage.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he didn't have to earlier, but I'm guessing as he felt himself – see, my thought would be that literally as he felt himself slow down as anybody would naturally, he would have thought a way to combat that so that he can continue his quest, his sacred charge. I mean, sure, that's going to happen later.
Yeah, he doesn't have time for that nonsense.
Don't shiv. It's a Dark Knight Returns line.
Contact at ifanboy.com. That's a call wrote in to ask us about Batman's fitness regime, which is beating up criminals. That's how he stays tip-top.
Had it coming.
Let's talk about other shows we do in addition to this one. The Josh's Talksplode with Kyle Starks is out. If you want to hear him talk, Kyle, about comics and writing comics and drawing comics and his fitness regime. Did you talk about that? I don't remember.
I don't believe we talked about his fitness regime. He seems to have a very positive mental attitude. I think that has a lot to do. It got pretty explicit.
Okay. And also, you can find the Wonder Woman Bloodline show, which the Animation Brand Trust talked about the latest DC Universe animated film. And that's somewhere behind this show as well. Those are back in the feed. And it's coming soon. It is a talk. No, not a talk explode. A book
explode.
That's a script error. Book explode this month. We pulled an audible. We had a book all ready to go. We decided to change it the last minute, which is why we don't tell you ahead of time, because sometimes that happens. So sometime in the next few weeks, you'll get a Booksplode. And once we are close to that time, we will tell you what it is. But it's a recent published...
Recent release.
Recent release. With, so if you do want to read along with the book, you can do that.
But oddly enough, the stuff inside, not recent.
Ooh, that's a spoiler.
It is, but not of the same vintage.
Ooh, a double spoiler.
A lot going on there. If you like what you're hearing, you want to talk about this, if you want to speculate on what that might be, anything, you can go to ifanboy.com and you can find all of our podcasts. You can comment on the shows that are there. You can sign up for an account. We don't do anything with that information, I promise you. We wouldn't have the bandwidth to. It just allows you to comment on the site, and there it is. You can find out what the pick is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy and following at ifanboy on Twitter, or follow at ifanboycomics on Instagram. It would be at ifanboy, but, well, you know how Instagram works if you don't get one. Right away, you'll find the best of the week in panels. You will find some. You'll if you want to look into the Batroc the Leaper date, you'll find a little more about that in one of those. For example, you can follow us individually. CS Kilpatrick on Instagram and JAA Flanagan on Instagram. Because I couldn't get to that first, and that was a long time ago. That was like 2007. There it is. I'm going to keep going through. If you like this show, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you want to, or let people know about it. The social media links are the word of mouth marketing currency out there now. But if you happen to be out there in meat space and you're listening, sitting on the subway with no headphones, listening to our show out loud and everyone hates you, but one person goes, yeah, that's actually kind of funny and I like the New Mutants. And you say, oh, well, they like that book. Okay, you could try this podcast. Do that. Try that as a thing. Don't ever, there's no reason to ever have your speakers turned up in the real world. I was at breakfast the other morning and I have my book and I'm reading and I was so happy to be reading my book. And then I hear next to me like a video, a guy starts watching and I was like, you got to be kidding me. And then I thought, all right, well, I could ask him nicely to turn it down and that will make him angry. Or I can pull up a Black Flag song and turn it up really loud on my phone, have him look at me and go, what, you don't mind? Or I could just leave.
And that's how Josh got stabbed to death at the donut shop.
Oh, there's pumpkin pancakes at the local diner. Don't do that, is what I'm saying. Tell people about the show in a different way other than forcing them to listen to it on public transit.
People do it at the gym. Everywhere now.
Do they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's awful.
All right. Well, that's it for this show.
It's kind of a downer of an ending. I'm sorry.
But until next week, when it hopefully will be less of a downer at the end, although I think I had a really good time reading comics and talking about them this week, so there you go.
Always. Always.
I will be Connor.
And I will remain Josh. Turn it down.
Or off.
Calm the fuck down!